Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
It's Wednesday, March 13th, and your Ben Jarofsky Show starts now. Get the best of Chicago delivered straight to your inbox every day. That's right. I'm talking about the Daily Reader. Just head to chicagoreader.com, sign up, and it'll be right there for you every morning. Now, on to today's show, we welcome back Monroe Anderson. The Ben Jarofsky Show, a presentation of the Chicago Reader. chicagoreader.com for everything that there is to know in the city of Chicago. If you want to know what to do, where to go, what to eat, what to drink, you want to know art, you want to know music in the city of Chicago, you want to know events coming up in the city, head to chicagoreader.com. It's that simple. And if you want more Ben Jarofsky, that's easy too. Head to chicagoreader.com/Jarofsky. That's J-O-R-A, V as in victory, S-K-Y.
Hello again, everybody. Ben Jarofsky here. We're calling this Hyde Park Herald Wednesday, and here's why. Because I'm going to give a shout-out to the Hyde Park Herald, neighborhood newspaper, south side of Chicago, Hyde Park. Fascinating interview with William Boddy, and he is the University of Chicago law professor who co-authored the law review article about Donald Trump and the insurrection. And he was the one who sort of put it – I think we can give this gentleman credit for putting it on the map, if you will, this concept that Donald Trump should not be allowed on the ballot because he violates the Constitution, particularly the 14th Amendment, the part that says an insurrectionist should not be allowed to run for president if the insurrection was against the presidency, which Donald Trump led an insurrection. He's an insurrectionist. If you are in any way a believer in the U.S. Constitution, and if you're honest about it, he should not be on the ballot. It's a simple ballot access question. And Boddy co-wrote a law review article. I forget when it ran. It was last year. Exceedingly well-researched, heavily footnoted. As I joked on the show, I read it, and that's as close as I've ever been to going to law school, was reading that law school article with tremendous historical analysis, historical examples. He really took the deep dive, to put it mildly. And the idea took hold. It was picked up by independents, moderate Republicans, those a few that exist, and Democrats. And they led efforts in states throughout the country to oust Donald Trump from the ballot, including in Colorado, Illinois, Maine. You know this, folks. My listeners know this. Maybe the rest of the population doesn't, but my listeners know this. And here in Illinois, a Cook County judge bounced Trump from the ballot because he's an insurrectionist. Colorado bounced on the ballot because he's an insurrectionist. So it comes to the Supremes. And the Supremes, I mean, we've talked about this at length. They chickened out. Either way, they were afraid of MAGA, physical fear of retaliation by MAGA, or they believed in the MAGA cause and wanted Donald Trump to remain on the ballot. I think Clarence Thomas fits into that category. Or they don't believe that what Trump did was an insurrection. I think Clarence Thomas is in that category too, with Sam Alito. And they think it was like good people standing up for a righteous cause, as deluded as that sounds. Whatever the reason, they chickened out. And the three Democratic justices on the court, for whatever reason, went along with it. They joined the main decision that argued that it would be too chaotic for the Supremes to bounce Trump off the ballot for this reason, that the federal government, that states do not have the right to kick a president off for violating the Constitution, which is a mind-blowing concept. that I still haven't got over. It is such an egregious lie. State governments all the time. State governments are chartered with the responsibility of monitoring the ballot. We have ballot access laws that are governed by the states in one state after another. What the Supreme Court ruled is so preposterous. I can't believe they thought that we the people would fall for it. And yet apparently we the people have fallen for it.
It doesn't matter. They're the Supreme Court. So
they're the Supreme
Court. Whether we fall for it or not, it's what they say is the law.
Is the law. So anyway, Bawdy gave this interview with the Hyde Park Herald, and I just want to read a portion of it. Monroe, Wednesday, Monroe Anderson's with me. And this really, I got to give him credit, because I feel as though, like, sometimes when you see something that is such an obvious falsehood, and other people aren't screaming it from the rooftops, it's like a form of gaslighting. Like, they tell you something that you know is false and pretend it's true. And so I'm really happy that Bawdy went on the record. And shout out to Max Blaisdell, the reporter from the Hyde Park Herald, who tracked him down. And here it is. Quote, Bawdy argued in an interview with the Herald, the U.S. electoral system is and has long been a patchwork precisely because the Constitution charges the states, not the federal government, with choosing electors and overseeing the election of federal officers. Quote, when the majority of the court says it doesn't want to have this patchwork approach, Bawdy said, what it's saying is it doesn't want to do the things the way the Constitution and our history says we do them. Historically, they didn't even have the same way of going about it, he continued. Legislators are even allowed to pick the electors they want instead of going through the election process. As Bawdy pointed out, candidates are on the ballot in some states and not others. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr., for example, has only qualified to appear on the ballot in a single state, Utah, though he's likely to qualify for six more states soon. The irony, according to Bawdy, is that those states could stop Trump from running for office statewide, like governor, but they claim they are powerless to prevent him from receiving their electoral votes for president. Thank you for pointing out that the sun rises in the east and sets in the west. The Supreme Court, in its infinite cowardice, said it was the other way around. The sun rises in the west and sets in the east. So listen, Professor Bawdy, you and I are probably on opposite ends of the political spectrum. Apparently, you're much more conservative than I am, and much more conservative than Monroe, who pretty much were the same, Monroe and I, politically speaking. But I appreciate you for pointing out, having the guts to point out the obviousness, which is Donald Trump's presence on the ballot should be disqualified because he's an insurrectionist. And according to the Constitution, insurrectionists should not run for president. I'm not giving this up, Monroe. I'm sorry. I'm not letting go of this one. I think that was such an obvious distortion of reality by the Supremes. I would say it's in the top 10 of the worst Supreme Court decisions in the history of the Supreme Court. So I'm not giving it up. Your thoughts?
Obviously, Trump is a insurrectionist. In fact, they, even in their judgment, they don't say that he's not an insurrectionist. What they say is that we don't want the chaos. Actually, what they're saying is we're afraid this would kick off a civil war if we do it. And what they don't say, but they have to be on the lookout for, is if the Dems take the White House, keep the White House, keep the Senate, take the House, then they're going to get some new judges to help them out on their making their decisions. There's no question about it. And I think actually it will come to fruition. Another one of my out there on the branch predictions.
Wait, hold on. I just want to say one thing.
Yes.
I think you're giving them a pass when you say they did this because they didn't want to, they felt like kicking them off would set off a civil war. The insurrection itself was a baby, 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 baby civil war. And right. So if you that was a civil war. That was like a first baby skirmish.
Yeah. So Love they're worried me. About a better, you know, it's just like with Ukraine. I mean, Biden has been reluctant to give the Ukrainians all the weapons they need to wipe out Russia for fear that it will kick off a nuclear war. That Putin will go to the ultimate.
I believe that at least two Supreme Court justices support the insurrection.
So oh, they yeah.
actually support yeah. the civil war. I oh, believe yeah. that Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito support the insurrection. And I believe that...
The three others like the whole idea of white supremacy and the Christian church, but they don't want a civil war.
So I...
The white supremacist Supreme Court.
Yeah.
Same people. Not the same people, but the ancestral ideological children of the people who brought you Ferguson versus Plessy.
Yeah.
Separate but equal. It's okay.
So what is your theory about the judges? You said it's a prediction that you're making, and I'm not quite sure I understand.
Okay, let me do this again. My prediction is that the Dems will have the Senate, which is a hard toe for them, but they'll get that. They'll keep the House, and they'll keep the White House. And after that, they are going to expand the Supreme Court.
Oh, okay, got it.
Yeah, so instead of there being 9, there'll be 12 or 13 or 14.
I don't know if we'll ever see that out of Biden. Are you saying that Biden's going to pull Obama? Remember, Obama was for gay marriage, then he was against gay marriage, and then once he was successfully elected a second time, he said, "Oh yeah, I'm really for." So you're going to say once he's successfully reelected, he doesn't have to worry about running for election again? That Biden's going to find his freak flag on this?
He's going to evolve.
Another famous evolution. Oh, Lord.
Yeah, we don't believe in revolution around here, but we like some evolution.
Evolution. All right. Anyway, one last time, shout out Hyde Park Herald. Maybe I can get that university professor to come on the show, and we'll take the deep dive on the 14th Amendment insurrection and the Supreme Court ruling. I'm sure he'll be more moderate than I am. He used to be clerk for Roberts, the law professor who wrote the story. Wrote the Law Review article. And so I'm sure he's much more temperate in his opinions.
One of the judges that launched this whole thing is a right wing judge who is really respected for his opinions and everything else. And he said, look, read what it says.
No, I know who you're talking about. He comes on my MSNBC all the time.
Right, exactly.
Michael, what's his last name? They always bring on the judge. They're very proud of this guy.
Nibbin or something like that.
No, I know who you're talking about. So, all right, Monroe, before we get to national politics, before I get you to weigh in on Senator Katie Britt of Alabama and her speech and all the other national Trump news, which people turn to religiously on Wednesday to hear your comments on, I need to pick your brain on the local stuff, get your thoughts on the local stuff. We're going to start with Ed Burke. Now, I'm going to set this up, ladies and gentlemen, for all you out there who can accuse me of being cynical. There are some out there who accuse me of being cynical. Okay. I don't believe I'm a cynical human being. There are those who listen to me and go, I'm cynical, particularly when I talk, about the Chicago voters, the average Chicago voter, and how clueless they are. So yesterday was announced, great article in the Sun Times, Dave McKinney shout out, John Seidel shout out, I talked about this yesterday with Stacey Davis Gates. It was announced that the Illinois Supreme Court could not rule on whether Ed Burke should be stripped of his law license because they couldn't get a quorum, a required number of judges to act on it, because at least four of the judges recused themselves for some kind of conflict of interest with Ed Burke, which they aren't required to stipulate what that conflict is. They just have to say that there's a conflict. Now, my initial opinion was this is a classic case of closing the barn door after the cow got out. I screwed it up, my barn metaphor, but essentially trying to rectify a situation after the damage is done. And the damage, the conflict of interest that existed for years and years when Ed Burke was one, the all-powerful alderman of the 14th Ward, two, chair of the Finance Committee and the City Council approving billions and hundreds of millions of dollars in TIFs and city budgets, three, one of the chief selectors of judges or judicial candidates in Cook County, and four, the husband of Ann Burke, who was a Supreme Court justice, and five, the owner of a property tax business that shook down people coming for the city looking for contracts to hire. So that conflict of interest existed for many, many years, and everybody looked the other way. Now, all of a sudden, they're weighing in on it. I go, this is a case of pretending there's reform where no reform exists, and the net effect is that Ed Burke gets to keep his law license, whether he uses it or not. I mentioned this to Monroe Anderson, and he basically said, Ben, you are so naive. You don't know how the game is played. You don't know how Chicago really works. And then you had an opinion that, remember, I was driving the car, and Monroe told me that I almost drove off the road laughing. I go, oh, my God. And they call me cynical and jaded. So, Monroe, your theory as to why the Supremes mysteriously recuse themselves on this matter. Go.
Okay. First of all, his wife, Burke's wife, was at one point the Supreme judge.
Yes.
On the court.
Yes.
And secondly, I mean, so she had influence. But more importantly, Burke had all sorts of influence. And I think the number is three of the judges on the court were helped out by Ed. So he called in some chits.
So what Monroe said is Eddie called him up. He said, look, I put you on that bench, son. You better deliver. It's like Donnie Trump calling Clarence Thomas.
Not Clarence.
No, no, Wimmy Clarence. Frank Kavanaugh,
the three,
right.
That he put up, the three, yeah, that he put up is the Supreme Court.
Look here. And you think they were intimidated by Ed Burke?
When I was press secretary, and Tim Evans and company sued to have an election early, Sawyer hoped to fulfill all of Harold Washington's term and then have an election,
yeah,
which would have given him time to prove that he was Harold's guy, didn't belong to the 29. Evans people sued to have a special election, and making the argument that the law said that Sawyer was an acting mayor, not the mayor, and therefore the people ought to be able to vote. Now, the problem with all that, of course, is that the Evans people were of a mind that it was between them and Sawyer, and that white folks didn't have anything to do with it. And the white folks, of course, would say, oh, yeah, why don't we have that election?
Yeah.
That'll work. Because we can put Dale here.
Oh,
so, right. So anyway, Sawyer's people were judge shopping, trying to find a judge that would be sympathetic to their cause. Unfortunately, so was Evans people, and the 29, particularly Daly, they were judge shopping too, and obviously they found a judge that was sympathetic to having a special election. And we know how everything else turned out.
Yeah. Wow.
So the point is, if there was this Richard Pryor joke. He said, you go to the courthouse in America, justice, that's what you find is just us.
Yeah.
The system is not favorable to people without power and
all right,
and lack of melanin.
Okay, so let me just go back to your central accusation in the terms, or your central theory, I should say, in the Burke case, and put aside for a moment that history lesson about the division in the Black community and the utter insanity that existed in the aftermath of Harold Washington's death that contributed heavily to the reign, the election of Richard M. Daley, and then his 20-year reign. So your central position, your theory, is that Ed Burke himself got on that telephone and he called these various Supreme Court justices and he told them, look, son, I put you on that bench. You owe me. And then they said, okay, you did put me on the bench.
I don't think he had to make the call. I think it was like one of these you understood.
Wow, man, that's damn.
Monroe,
here's the thing. They don't owe him anything. They're on the bench. He's disgraced. He's about to go to prison. They don't owe him anything. It's like Amy Coney Barrett doesn't owe Donnie Trump anything right now. She could do whatever she wants. She's on the bench. Same thing with Gorsuch. Same thing with Kavanaugh.
Except this is what you're ignoring, is that this is a social system. You know, Kavanaugh owes Trump nothing, but he's in the right-wing social setting of America. And so he has friends. He has relatives. He has people who've done favors for him. He has to go along with that crowd. Burke and Madigan had their own little group, and there are people who feel beholden to him.
Wow, that's pathetic. I think you may be, folks. I must confess, I may be too naive and innocent.
Are you too principled? this is why you're not all serious.
I am too principled for my own good. I take it like I thought it was legit. They were trying to be legit. And Monroe goes, no, man, don't you get it? They're just like MAGA judges.
Right.
Like, why do you, ladies and gentlemen, think about this. Why do you think Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, Neil Gorsuch, who profess to be originalists, who profess to be by the letter of the law, who profess to be by the exact wording of the Constitution, rewrote the Constitution and came to allowing Donnie to be on the ballot.
They also believe in states' rights.
Yeah, and they also believe in states' rights. Now all of a sudden they go, no, the states have no rights, even though they had rights. It's written in the Constitution. Why do you think they ripped up the Constitution? They did it, according to Monroe, because they didn't want, one, they were afraid MAGA might lynch them. They saw the insurrection. Two, they didn't want to be kicked out of the metaphorical country club of MAGA. They didn't want their friends disowning them.
Right. They didn't want invitations withheld.
Yeah.
The social events are speaking engagements are any of that stuff are fancy trips like Clarence got, you know, it's by the billionaires.
Yeah.
They have a comfy life and they want to keep it.
So what you're telling me in both the Illinois Supreme Court situation and the U.S. Supreme Court, it's not legit. They're not playing by rules.
They're playing by their rules. They made the rules. They get to enforce them because they're the powers that be.
Wow.
And it's for all of us regular people, F you.
Yeah, man, that's exactly right. only little people have to abide by rules. Remember, was right. Leona Helmsley, the woman who owned the hotel in New York, got trouble for not paying her taxes. She only little people pay taxes or something like that.
Right, exactly.
So, well, so next, think about that, ladies and gentlemen, next time you think I'm naive. And as Sid Monroe's history lesson, which we should go into at greater length in another time, it truly is, when I reflect and I back on it and I talk to people my age or from my generation, like Monroe or Delmarie Cobb or the late Conrad Worrell, we reflect upon what was going on in Chicago in 1987 after Harold died, 88. And the turmoil, the divisions, and the chaos in the Black community. It was a pivotal moment. And that division, that lack of unity, led to Daley, and then it led to Rahm. And how many years was that, Monroe? It took, oh my God, it took
22 years.
Yeah. No, more than that. Rahm was till it took 30 years.
Oh, you found Rahm. You and your infatuation with Rahm. I forgot about that.
You love Rahm so much. By the way, speaking of which, your favorite mayor, Rahm, that you love so much, did you see who he was hanging out with? His latest tweet? You didn't see this, did you?
No, I don't think so. I'm so through with him. Because I never was with him to begin with.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes.
Drink some truth sermon, tell the truth. Did you vote for Rahm or Jesus Garcia in 2015?
Oh, Garcia.
All right. How about in 2011? Did you vote for Rahm or Miguel de Valle or Gary Chico? Who'd you vote for in 2011?
De Valle.
Me too. I knew you did. All right. But anyway, Rahm tweeted this out. This is hilarious. It's a picture of him cupping hands like in a victory symbol with Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And here's what he wrote. It took Tokyo to bring the two of us, Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders and me, together for our version of bipartisanship. No one would have thought. This is so unbelievable. No one would have thought we would be like-minded and agree on many things, most importantly, the U.S.-Japan alliance and American security. Also unbelievable, we got through a 25-minute meeting without talking about American politics. --not. So, listen, man, your guy, Mayor Rahm, is unbelievable. That's all I got to say. He's relentless. And, I'm trying to figure out what he's angling for, and then someone told me, you know what he's angling for, Ben? Attention. All right.
No, more than that, he's also trying to work his way into being of importance, because he screwed up in Chicago, and he's the fallen mayor of Chicago. And so he's still a relatively young man, so he's trying to get back up there where he can sit at the table with the grown-ups.
Yeah. But you know what? If he ran for office right now, I'd say your neighborhood would vote overwhelmingly for him.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You know?
You'd be the only non-vote. You'd be the only one on your block.
There'd never be a couple more. But.
Okay. They'd be hiding. All right, let's get the State of the Union speech. Joe Biden's State of the Union speech happened the day after last Thursday, so it was the day after you were on the show. And then the extraordinary response by the Republicans with Senator Katie Britt of Alabama also occurred on Thursday. So I haven't had a chance to talk to you about this, at least on the mic. So let's start with Biden first. As I recall, you were jumping, doing backflips with jubilation over Biden's performance in that State of the Union speech. Am I accurate? I'm metaphorical backflips, that is. Am I accurate in?
I told you MSNBC was doing that.
Oh, not you?
No, I had a more. I told you so.
Cocky in his old age, ladies and gentlemen. You did tell us. So what do you think you established there in that speech?
Well, first and foremost is that he made this immediate, this incredible transformation for being senile, sleepy Uncle Joe to being badass. Too loud, too rude, too nasty to be president.
Did you think any of that?
No, I think that Joe, they finally started letting Joe be Joe. You know, it's just like, as I've said, the Bears should have let Fields be Fields. Yeah. And then they wouldn't be shopping him out.
Oh, I forgot to ask you about the Bear Stadium. We'll close with Bear Stadium. I meant to ask you about the Bear Stadium. They're unbelievable. They're relentless. By the way, Monroe is more cynical and jaded than I am on the Bears cynical stadium deal. And I think he's right on that front, too. I think he was right in the Supreme Court. I was too naive. And I think he's right about the Bears, too. All right. But going back to Joe Biden. So the whole point of Joe Biden was just to demonstrate to the world that he's not a doddering old man, and he's got a little fire in his belly, and he can think quickly on his feet. He is also he's combating a lifelong stuttering habit. And as someone who has dyslexia, I'm very sympathetic to him, because you really have to concentrate when you have an affliction like that.
You saw where the asshole former president was making fun of that.
Yeah. I saw that. That's what I was leading up to. So I don't know, what do you think about American, your fellow Americans? Do they love it when they think it, do they think it's funny, in your humble opinion, when they see Donald Trump mock Joe Biden?
If they're in the cult, yes. The 42% or whatever it is, not majority of Americans who think that Donald Trump is a godsend. They loved it.
And what about everyone else?
You know, Trump has been so tacky and so obnoxious and so evil that it's baked in now. It's like, you know, whatever he says, whatever he does, oh yeah, that's Trump. We'll take care of his ass in November.
he hasn't wavered, ladies and gentlemen, in that November outcome, by the way. I got a different view. I think there's permanent damage when Donald Trump behaves this way. And I feel like the consequences will last a long time, even if he's defeated.
But the thing is, I think we give Trump too much credit, that these people, the MAGA nuts, were out there. They were just looking for a leader, and he came along. And he did what they wanted to do, and he said what they wanted to hear. And he believes what they believe. So when he's in jail, they're still going to be out there and thinking and feeling what they think and feel.
I'm going to make that bet with you. I don't think Trump's going to jail. I think the same kind of logic that I don't even know if you call it logic, that governed the Supreme Court ruling on the insurrection case, the same kind of logic that manipulated them into making up constitutional rules that don't exist, to taking away the powers that the state have and giving them to the federal government, when it's exact obvious the opposite. And it's the exact opposite of their ruling when it comes to abortion. The fact that they clearly don't play by any rules, don't want to hold Trump accountable for anything, and are fearful of being ousted from their social circles or being beat up by MAGA. that will prevail, and they will keep him out of jail. He will not go to jail. And furthermore, if he's elected president, and he, to your point, if he's convicted in Georgia, if that judge in Georgia doesn't throw the whole thing out, I believe he won't even just, he just won't go to, he'll just stay out of Georgia. He'll just ignore it. He'll ignore the verdict in Georgia.
Okay, and, let me say this.
Go.
I'll bet that you thought that Trump wouldn't be fined $500 million either.
Nobody's received a penny of it, I want to say.
The $100 million that he owes to E. Jean Carroll,
yes,
is now in a vault. He can't get to it. Trump can't get to it. And he's going to repeal, but a jury of quote his peers,
yes,
have ruled that he insulted her,
yeah,
and he raped her. I mean, he's not getting out of that one. So that money, he can kiss that money goodbye. Now it's not his money anyway. It's those suckers that believe that he needs the money to take the country back.
Yeah, no.
He needs a contribution for that.
Yeah.
And now it's going to be the RNC's job to make sure that the money that people were giving to have him reelected are going towards his lawyer's fees. Because
wow,
he's not rich. He's lying about how rich he is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another event that happened, I think it was over the weekend. Donald Trump's daughter-in-law is now running the Republican National Committee. So it's truly a family business.
Right.
As
we know, that's why they can't do business in New York anymore.
Yeah.
Because they're a crooked business.
Well, apparently they'll always be able to do business in Alabama. Okay, because they love Trump in Alabama. Florida. All right. Well, that bet's on the table. I'm just telling you right now. I do not believe Donald Trump, if elected, will go to jail.
If he's elected, he won't go to jail. No.
Yeah, but even in the Georgia case, where it's a state court, he can't. He can't pardon himself.
Right.
Exactly. I just think he won't go. It just won't go. It's just like, well, you can't get me.
What are
you
gonna do? Yeah, right. No, if he gets reelected, then all bets are off. In fact, we're in Russia at that point.
Yeah,
because Putin is going to be calling the shots.
Yeah.
Because Trump, like the MAGA cult, is so simple minded. They believe Trump. Trump is so simple-minded that he believes Putin. So, you know, it's turn off the lights and end the democracy if he's reelected.
All right, so let me ask you this question. Who's more dependent on who, Trump on Putin or the Illinois Supreme Court justices on Ed Burke for their positions?
Putin is running Trump.
More than Ed Burke is running the Illinois Supreme Court.
Yeah.
That was just a one-off.
Trump is running the white right-wingers on our Supreme Court. Now, who's more it's a matter of magnitude. What the U.S. Supreme Court, the damage the U.S. Supreme Court is doing now is much greater than the damage at the Illinois Supreme Court.
Oh, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly.
Right.
I mean, my first interpretation of what the Illinois Supreme Court did with the recusal was that they were trying to show ethics. The U.S. Supreme Court doesn't even pretend that they follow ethics.
No.
Well, yeah, Clarence Thomas weighed in on that lawsuit, even though his wife was a
She was there.
Leader of the insurrection. And she was part of it.
And she was at the rebellion on January 6th. I mean, she was out there.
Yeah, I don't believe she. No, she did not go to the Capitol.
Yeah, she was there. She didn't go in. She
was. Are you sure about that?
Yes.
I think another one of her famous bets will be made. And we'll go to that restaurant. This time we'll get there a little early so we can get in. I'm dying to go to that place. But I think you're wrong about that. But you know what? I'll check that out at a later. Point is, I do believe the Illinois Supreme Court has a greater standard of ethics than the U.S. Supreme Court, even in the face of this Burke thing.
Right.
I absolutely believe they have a greater standard of ethics. They're a cleaner, less biased, more courageous bunch.
Yeah, they're just looking out for Burke. That's all. Say, well, this is our guy. And they're going to look out for Madigan when they get a chance.
Yeah, that's it. That's once that's done, it's over. But
other than that, they believe in true justice.
Other than Madigan and Burke. Right. Come on, Supremes. That was a low moment, man. You guys. Oh, Lord, that was embarrassing. Other than Burke and Maddie. All right. So the whole point of Joe Biden was to show that he was vibrant and strong, even at the age of 82 or whatever he is, or 81, whatever. Now we get to the rebuttal. In our system, the President of the United States delivers a State of the Union address, and then right after that, someone from the opposite party gets to make a rebuttal, which is, it's all absurd because the rebuttal is usually pre-recorded before. So
they don't know what the president's going to say. Yeah.
Which is amazing. What if President Biden had gotten up there and said, I've seen the error of my ways and now I'm a MAGA man.
Right. No, this is the thing is this it's been. If they ever call you and say, Ben, we need you to do the rebuttal to the president, tell them no, because you will ruin your illustrious career.
Oh, my God. It's hard to ruin it, but I get your point.
I mean, think of the Indian governor of Florida, Jindal.
Not Florida. You talk about Louisiana. Bobby Jindal. Oh, you're talking about Haley of
No, I'm talking about Jindal.
Bobby Jindal was from Louisiana.
Okay, Louisiana. I'm talking about little Marco.
Oh, yeah, Rubio from Florida. Yeah,
right. And now this woman, you come out of it worse off than you went into it.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't even know who this woman was. And so she could have happily hung out in nowhere land, no name land.
Mm.
And she was considered a moderate before doing this.
She was considered a moderate by who?
By the media.
Well, that media.
They said she did moderate stuff. She wasn't with the crazies at that time. It wasn't considered to be.
Only the New York Times would consider this mainstream media that would consider this lady a moderate is the New York Times. So that's because they bend over backwards. It's embarrassing. Bend over backwards to placate MAGA, even though MAGA despises them. I mean, Donald Trump endorsed her, pulled his endorsement of the other guy he was endorsing before her because he liked her so much. She's such a MAGA person. Now, Monroe, I'm going to ask you something here. Get your thoughts on this. I did not run this by you before we went on the air, but I was thinking about this. So she gave the rebuttal.
Right.
We've talked about the setting, the kitchen.
Right.
Which is an interesting setting. Because
they have this stereotype of suburban housewives as being like from Ozzie and Harriet, or Father Knows Best, where in the suburbs, this is how white women, and they're only white women in the suburbs, in their minds. This is how they live and think, is that they're sitting around, they're around the house with their aprons on, getting the house clean and cooking dinner. And then the father comes home and they take off their apron and they hand him a martini and listen to his adventures of the day. And that's how it is. And so she was making a direct appeal to those women by being in the kitchen. You know, whereas back, what is 30 or 40 years ago, that quote was, a woman's place is in the House of Representatives.
All right. So I'm, this is what is one of the twisted things about everything, that presentation, everything you just said. I believe that they put her in that kitchen to send a reassuring sign to America, to everybody watching, that this was not a quote unquote feminist. This was not a woman's liber. This was a real American. That's what they kept emphasizing. Who knows her place, and that place is in the kitchen, which is bizarre. If you,
although she is in reality a U.S. senator.
She's a U.S. senator and a very ambitious human being. Who has been determined to succeed in politics almost from the day she went to college at the University of Alabama. I'm just reading her resume. She joined the staff of U.S. Senator Richard Shelby in 2004 as a deputy press secretary. Are you ready for this? 22 years old.
Yeah.
22 years old. This woman came out of the starting gates knowing what she wanted to do and determined to do it. I'm not hating on it. You know what I'm saying? But to pretend like you're just I'm just a mom sitting in the kitchen as opposed to a street fighter. Do you follow me, Monroe?
Right.
Okay. And she
skipped drama classes, unfortunately, but she's in college.
She's a terrible actress, by the way. Yeah. And she's a lawyer. She graduated from law school. And here's my memory. My memory was correct. As a Senate candidate, Britt publicly aligned herself with Donald Trump. Britt gave credence to Trump's false claims of fraud in the 2020 presidential election. She advanced to a runoff in the Republican primary against Representative Mo Brooks. Trump officially endorsed Britt on June 10th, 2022, calling her, quote, a fearless America First warrior. He had previously withdrawn an endorsement of Brooks. And with that endorsement, she defeated Brooks in the runoff with 63% of the vote. So she is by no means a moderate. She is a Trumper. And she wouldn't have gotten that designated spot if she wasn't a Trumper.
The Republican Party is now the Trump Party.
It is.
After the bloodbath in November.
Yeah. So I would say the only people who would call her a moderate are the New York Times. That's the only one. And they're just because they're bending over backwards. So let me ask, this is what a point I was going to ask you about. While she gave that speech, she was wearing around her neck a necklace with a cross.
Yes, of course.
Very visible.
Yeah.
Your thoughts about that, Monroe?
I have mentioned more than once on this show that there is a white Christian nationalist movement going on. And so that was the signal. But there she was. She was one of them.
Yeah, it just puts it out there.
Right. They are putting it out there now. You have some people calling for the Constitution to be rewritten, where it says that basically we're a Christian nation. The white Christians want the power because you Jews and us blacks are getting too much power and disturbing the way God really meant for America to be.
Yeah. No, it's pretty deep. It's right out there. It's just put it right out there. And not everyone in America is Christian. And we're a country that's got another principle about a separation between a church and state. And
this is their problem. Again, their problem is that they have these enclaves that they're in, where they're watching Fox News or reading Newsmax. I mean, they're seeing this right wing. They're in this right wing bubble, echo chamber, and so their reality is all this stupid stuff, and they think that's the real world.
Yeah,
and it's not.
No.
And they will be finding that out come November.
Yeah, man, I love that prediction by Monroe Anderson. By the way, I briefly ventured in to your favorite bubble after the State of the Union address. I go, what is MSNBC saying about this?
MSNBC is not a bubble. That's the real. They present both sides.
They're with
a very liberal slant now.
Yes, yeah.
Obviously, but. They practice journalism like I was taught at Indiana University back in the 60s, where you give both sides, you don't just, and you don't lie. You try to give the truth, although it may be from your perspective.
Well, when Biden got through that speech without a major fumble or stumble or anything, he vigorously engaged.
Yeah, because they were holding their breath. They didn't know.
Yeah, they were holding their breath before that speech. And when it was over, they were like, yeah. I love that. I was like, man, you guys don't know how to hold back, okay? You're right. I mean, they do it. They're more credible than Fox, which is saying nothing. They're more credible than the New York Times, which is not
saying anything. And CNN even. CNN is doing one of those both sides thing.
Oh, man.
And the problem with it is, I mean, the reality right now is that it's only one side. And that we should be for, and that's democracy.
Mm.
If the other side wins, we're going to have a strong man in charge of the country. And there's going to be all sorts of horrible things going on. Because the only reason Trump didn't pull off his horrible things in that first term is he didn't know which levers to pull. He didn't know where the bathroom was. Now he knows. And he's going to appoint people who will give him what he wants. And he'll do that through executive appointments. So he doesn't have to take it through the Senate,
mm-hmm.
And it leaves whoever he puts into a position vulnerable to his wishes.
Yeah.
And it'll be terrible if it would happen, but it's not going to happen.
All right, so let me move the topic a bit to baby Bobby Kennedy and the bizarre attitude Democrats seem to have toward him. And lay out my position and then you respond.
Okay.
So baby Bobby Kennedy is Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's 70 years old, but somehow in this race, he's a young man. And he's running for president on a third party, or he's attempting to. Originally, he was going to run as a Democrat, but he was being thwarted by the Democratic Party, to put it mildly. And there was no chance that he was going to get anything close to defeating Joe Biden and winning the nomination. In fact, by the end, he was below 5%, I think, in most polls. So now he switched. He's running as a third-party candidate. And the story broke the other day that he had been reaching out to former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, former wrestler Jesse Ventura, and former Green Bay Packer quarterback Aaron Rodgers to be a potential running mate. Apparently, the conversations with Aaron Rodgers where he had many conversations with Aaron Rodgers. So that's a thought. The Democratic Party has, through, if you read the New York Times and the Washington Post, their sources, never named, talk about cowardly journalism, say that they're worried about him. And once again, I do not understand the logic that governs Democratic operatives, Monroe. Clearly, Bobby Kennedy, baby Bobby, is a threat to Trump, not Biden. His numbers among Democrats has consistently fallen ever since Democrats came face to face with the reality that he was anti-vaxxer. I don't know any Democrat in America, like consistent American Democratic voter, who's going to vote for baby Bobby. Even the old ones who loved his father and loved that Kennedy name, they realize they got through the American voters. American voters are not as dumb as like some Chicago journalists think Chicago voters are. And they've figured out that baby Bobby's an anti-vaxxer. They're not going to vote for him. He's a threat to the Republicans. His supporters would be like, I don't get why Democrats are so worried about him. Go.
This is the problem with Democrats. Okay. Is that they got struck by lightning in 2016. Mm-hmm. And so now, whenever they hear thunder, they run for cover. Trump is not going to win. With three counts got dropped, so he has 88 counts instead of 91 counts.
Wait, six were dropped, weren't they, in Georgia?
Six. Okay, well, the math on that. Six.
Yeah, so it's 85.
85.
Yeah.
Still a lot.
Yeah, it's still a lot. You're right.
He brags about Dobbs.
Yeah.
He's a poster boy racist. He's not the whole principle in politics. Is you try to reach out to grow your tent. He's just aiming at the cult.
Yeah.
And he's turning everybody else off. He is going to lose. And so, the Democrats, all they need to do, first of all, Biden has been a great president. He's easy to underestimate because he's so low key and he makes mistakes a lot, we should say, but he has governed magnificently.
All right,
he has been a great president. Every Democrat should be saying that. Not that he's a good president or that he's better than Trump, but his record says that he has been a great president. So the Democrats ought to quit all the hand-wringing and just get out there and talk about how great he is and how horrible Trump is and just go with that. I mean, and just talk about the terrible things Trump did in his 4 years and the incredible things Biden has done in his 3 years, almost four now.
All right. So let me push back with you and speak for voters, let's say the 13% in Michigan who voted uncommitted. I think it was like almost 20% in Minnesota that voted uncommitted. And it has to do with Biden's attitude toward Netanyahu, embracing Netanyahu and, being complicit to a degree with
he's dumping Netanyahu. He's making a move where he's going to go against Netanyahu completely, but he has to embrace Israel for a whole bunch of reasons.
You realize there's going to be a massive counter protest at the Democratic convention in August.
I know that's the plan, and and it's a real possibility. But what I'm saying is that I think Biden is going to do everything that he can to change the story, the narrative on that between now and then, to avoid that, because that's what hurt Humphrey and gave us Nixon.
Mm-hmm. That and Nixon sabotaging the peace talks in Paris.
Right.
And by the way, voters, I got news for you. If you don't think Trump and Netanyahu are allied, you are a gullible Chicago voter. That's why.
Right. No, they are very much allied. The S, Trump and Putin, Trump and Xi.
I mean, they are tied at the hip.
And Kim. Yeah. And Orban.
Listen, Netanyahu is such a cynical human being that at this point, there's many reasons why he's continuing that slaughter in Gaza, in my humble opinion.
Right.
But one of them is because he knows it creates a divide in the Democratic Party and increases the likelihood of Donald Trump getting elected. Absolutely, right. I believe in that.
Yeah, no, he's more important. You're making him too magnificent. He's doing that because he wants to not go to jail. Same reason Trump.
Same Trump. I get it. I said many reasons. He's doing it. One is to stay out of jail and stay in office.
Stay out of jail.
Yeah. And the other is to clear Gaza. That's the other reason. But
yeah, right. Yes. A land grab. Right.
Yeah. But that's all speculation on my part, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's obvious. It's not, you know, speculation, but it's obvious. So that's what's going on.
Is there any part of you that says, I don't know if I can vote for Joe Biden because he was too close to Netanyahu? He allowed Netanyahu to get away with too much attacks, savagery in Gaza.
Who was he running against?
Trump.
No.
You just answered your own question. Right. Trump has said that he's immune. So maybe Trump would argue that Joe Biden was immune too. I actually think, Monroe, that I've said this before. I mean, I know I would have voted uncommitted if I was in Michigan. I think you said you would too.
Oh yeah, you're right. No, because
I think a message has to be sent to Joe Biden. Yeah,
Biden needed the message, and he got it.
Yeah,
that's the point I'm making, is that he got the message, and he's been getting further and further away from Netanyahu. Because first of all, they don't like each other. They've never been in the same club. But Biden is a go-along, get-along guy. That's why people like him as much as they do.
All right. Now, let's close by going back to the Bears thing, because you said something today on the phone to me before we did the show that I just felt the people should hear. So, the last few days, the Bears announced they didn't. It was funny. They didn't really announce it. They played it pretty well.
Yeah,
they dropped a dime to their favorite reporters, and it was treated like a breaking news exclusive, as opposed to having just a general press conference on it. When you do it that way, Monroe, you know, because you manipulated the press for during the Sawyer years, you guarantee favorable coverage. Because when you slip the when you deliver an article to a reporter, they're so happy they just run what you want. So you know how the game is played. As opposed to having a news conference,
as a general rule in the media, it's all follow the leader. If somebody breaks the story, then everybody else tries to grab the story and embellish it or something.
Yes. By the way, I got to give the Sun-Times, shout out to the Sun-Times editorial board. I guess it was Lee Bay who wrote our editorial today. Really strong editorial denouncing the Bears' lakefront move. And I was very impressed with it. So shout out Lee Bay. But anyway, so the Bears say, we're through with Arlington Heights. We're going to go we want to go to the lakefront just south of Soldier Field. And we're going to, trust us when we tell you, we're going to turn it into a beautiful, magnificent, publicly owned stadium, which means they don't have to pay property taxes. And it's going to have a lot of parks around it, which means they can use TIF money to build it. What geniuses. They're not going to pay property taxes, but they're going to get to spend property taxes.
We get 20% more because as who pitched the whole lakefront. Make no small plans.
Oh, but Daniel Burnham, yeah.
Yeah, the Burnham project is not supposed to have buildings And so they're going to put an amusement park.
Yeah, they'll put they got lawyers figuring out ways to get around all this stuff.
Right, exactly. Right.
And so I said, well, Monroe, looks like the Bears have left Arlington Heights behind. To which you said, are you kidding me? This is a ruse.
Right. This is a signal to the Arlington Heights taxpayers is that if you don't give us what we want, then we're not going to be here. You're not going to get us.
Yeah.
You're going to go back to being nobodies instead of like Bears, instead of Wrigley Field in Arlington Heights.
And I got news for you. Yeah. I said it before, I'll repeat it. If they build a dome stadium in Arlington Heights and they're on national TV, and they're still going to be showing the Chicago lakefront. They're going to be showing Arlington Heights.
They're going to show you the Ferris wheel.
What Ferris? The Ferris wheel at Navy Pier.
Yeah, the Bears are going to give Arlington Heights some landmark type thing that can go on TV.
Man, that is so boring. A Ferris wheel.
Right.
Oh my God, that's pathetic. Anyway, so that's his prediction.
By the way, I went to see Fly Over Chicago. It's really good.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah,
it's too short, though. It's only 10 minutes. It should be 15 minutes.
All right.
It's a good 10 minutes.
So anyway, that's your prediction. Are you going to make that a formal official prediction that the Bears will still be at Arlington Heights, will remain at Arlington?
I don't know whether the voters are going to. We're going to find out, because you like to call your potential listeners stupid. And I refuse to do that. So I'm saying we'll see if the Arlington Heights voters are wise enough.
Oh, yeah, I guess so. To insult them. You know, it really is not a sound strategy to be insulting you. You're absolutely correct. And there's a guy, I'll call Matt. Let's say his name is Matt, who's called me out for that and chided me. We're calling the citizens of Chicago. I think I call them ignorant or something. Or they say they're not paying attention. Whatever. Anyway.
I mean, you can get away with naive.
We've all been naive
at one point or another.
No, I'm naive.
Right, but nobody, right. Well, see, that's why you can call them naive.
I think Chicago voters
are. I'm one of you.
All those white people who voted for Daley and Rahm,
yeah,
all those years, they weren't doing it out of naivete. They were doing it because they felt that you have to have a white man in charge.
Yeah.
So that's that. And they need a white man. So maybe they were naive to think that it was going to make their lives better. You follow what I'm saying?
Well, except they're all gone. They've either died out or they've moved to the suburbs. So the white Chicagoans now are a different breed of white people.
All right, you know what?
This is me stepping into my authority as the world's America's foremost white
America's foremost authority in white people. Right, I'm writing this down. Are white people in Chicago a different breed of white people?
Yeah, they are. They're younger, they're smarter, better educated. Sorry, they're better educated, and they're professional, not looking for jobs at City Hall.
Wait a minute, time out. You've talked to your neighbors about city issues. You think they're that much different than people in Chicago in 1989?
Yeah, they are because they don't admit to being a racist. They're the white liberals. They're the white liberals. They're the second generation wave of white liberals.
White liberals have devolved. I think white liberals back in the day when you first moved to Chicago were a more sophisticated breed than the white liberal today. What do you think about that theory?
I don't think it's true. I didn't think... I was... When Harold ran for mayor, I was living in Lincoln Park at that time, among them. I was living among them. So I was already, I wasn't an expert at that time, but I was taking notes.
You know what? You're right. I'm wrong. I take it back.
I was scaring white women back then, yeah, when I was walking down the street. Wow. The thing is, what happened with Harold and why they went to him was because Newsweek and Time magazine ran cover stories about Chicago's ugly mayoral race. Yeah. And it was embarrassing to them for their friends in Europe and their friends on the East Coast or West Coast that we were looking so barbaric that they were going, oh, no, that's not us.
You know what? And in reality, only 20% of them voted for Harold.
Exactly.
So you know what? I sit corrected. You're right. I'm wrong. It is at best the same. I mean, right. You know what I mean? Very fragile.
It's better, you know. I mean, if you look at your children and their friends, there wasn't a lot of that going on in Chicago in 1980.
No. You talk about integration?
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah. No, you're right about that.
You know, so that the millennials, a lot of the millennials have friends of all different colors.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? Stacy was saying the same thing on the show yesterday. We got off on a tangent about that. So, all right, we're going to end on that optimistic note that things are a little bit better in the city of Chicago on the racial front. Always good to be a little optimistic. All right, Monroe, rest up. We'll talk to you next Wednesday, all right?
All right. Okay. All right.
All right, very good. I want to thank producer Chris. He does an outstanding job. And Monroe will agree with me when I say, hey, producer Chris, give yourself a raise. Take it out of petty cash. Peace and love, everybody.
And as always, don't forget, you can catch previous Ben Jarofsky shows, Benny J bonus interviews, columns from the man himself, and so much more at ChicagoReader.com. You can follow Ben on Instagram at Benny J Show. And don't forget to tell your friends and like, subscribe, and follow The Ben Jarofsky Show on your favorite streaming and podcasting platforms.